Blog Talk Radio.
Punkins. Isn't that funny, Punkins? This is Susie Boo. Welcome to the Peace, Love, and Lip Gloss Hour. Lori Jones is waiting on hold. Lori, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey,
how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. As you know, I just pulled in on two wheels.
On
and
two wheels?
And I drive an SUV.
You had to ride your bicycle to work today.
I want to ride my bicycle.
I forgot all about that. Don't you love Queen? I miss that crap. They don't make music like that anymore.
They really don't. That Freddie Mercury. I was so in love with him.
I know. And do you remember Frankie say relax?
Don't do it.
You know what? I say that all the time. I got a hot picture of a hot dog. And I put it on my comments, and I said, Frankie, say relax. And nobody got it.
Just don't do it.
Don't do it.
When you want to come.
I know. Oh, so how was your week, Miss Lori Jones?
My week has been fantastic.
Really? Do you have any reports of attacks by wild dogs?
No. He was attacked by a wild dog.
We don't know where that came from, boys
no.
and girls.
You know, I think that was one of those little paranormal things.
It was. It was an EVP.
Better than an AVP.
Unless you were being an A that night, but I don't think you were.
Roger.
Sounded to me like Roger. Okay, all these inside jokes and people are listening, they don't know. Okay. There was a spoof on Saturday Night Live with the guy that plays House. What's his name?
Dr. House.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know him.
Well, you all know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Anyway, they did a Most Haunted spoof where they actually had a thermal. Well, first of all, they thought they had an EVP, and it was because House, who was pretending to be Derek Okura, had let a little toot. And they're all like,
hilarious.
Did you hear that? Oh, my God, did you catch it? And they kept playing it slower and slower. It would be like, and then it would be like, and he said, I think it says Julian. And then the other guy says, no, it sounds more like Roger to me. Well, ends up they have the thermal imaging camera on whoever it is, and they had to actually fart because you see it shoot out of their backside, and it's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. But we were fooling around when we were in Bardstown, and Tara, Lori was posing for a picture, and Tara put her ghost meter, her little her EMS detector by Lori's butt when Lori was all posed. So I have it on my MySpace and it says, I think it says
Roger.
And Lori's been a very good sport about that. I told her I'd take it down, but it's just too funny every time I look at it. If I'm having a bad day, I just look at that picture and crack it.
I know. And, yeah, you said, I'll take it down. I said, oh, no, don't. It's hilarious.
Well, you're just happy. That's what's so funny.
I know. We have a wonderful guest tonight.
I know we do. I cannot wait to talk to her.
I know. And she has, I've just received a message from her. She got back and home in plenty of time for us.
Cool. Cool.
So we can dial her in at any time.
Okay, you want to go ahead and do that, and I'll talk a little bit about her?
And her name is Dr. Pamela Heath, and I wanted to say one thing is that I have been everywhere where Tara and I have gone, you know that I have lived and breathed her, you know, so much for, 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
And since I've learned about her through Professor Lloyd Auerbach that we had on last week.
Right.
And
it's like parapsychology month.
It really is. So I will dial her in.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Okie doke. All right. Listen, everybody, Pamela Heath, I don't know what the heck this woman hasn't been. She's a parapsychologist. She's been an anesthesiologist. I think she still is an anesthesiologist. She's an artist, a cartoonist. I think she's even done some ballroom dancing. I know that she works very closely with Lloyd Auerbach and has appeared with Chris Fleming on Dead Famous. She's very, very into PK and energy work, and I guess she is pretty good with energy wheels. And she's got a couple books out. And one is about what happens to us after we pass, if you take your own life with suicide, which I can't wait to talk to her about. But if you want to learn a little bit more about her, she's got a PamelaHeath.com website, and also you can get to her through our MySpace. She's on our top friend, and read some of her blogs. Some of her ideas and some of her ethics as far as ghost hunting goes are very, very impressive, and I think you'll enjoy reading about them.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, Susie Boo. We have Dr. Pamela Heath with us.
I am so pleased to meet you.
Oh, thank you.
Please on the telephone.
On the telephone. All right, Susie, I'll hand it to you.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, I have to tell you that once I read your blogs,
uh-huh.
Oh, my Lord, you know, you echo everything that kind of rumbles around in my scattered little head. First of all, I want you to tell everybody about the link that you put up, because I think that's so important with the history and the different posts that parapsychologists and ghost hunters of the past have put down.
Well, basically what this is a link to an online parapsychology library. And to me it's the most fabulous thing, you know, ever done in parapsychology, because one of the big problems we've always had is nobody, you know, the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing. If you didn't happen to have the journals, you know, you frankly didn't know what somebody else was doing, what their research had said. You can go on, and some of the library is free to everybody. Some of it is subscription-based because they give the money back to the journals. But if you join, if you become a subscriber, you can have full access to every journal ever published of the Society for Psychical Research, the Proceedings, the Journal of Parapsychology. I think they're getting the European Journal of Parapsychology up there.
Wow.
Doesn't yet have the Australian Journal, but everybody is, you know, basically donating their material to this library, because the big problem we've had is that nobody knows what's been done. And this was actually a big issue for me when I was writing the PK Zone, because they didn't have that yet. And there was a lot of stuff that I begged, I borrowed, you know, I would go all over the place to try to find copies of the material to talk about it. And now, anybody can do it. I mean, that's part of why I'm doing an updated version of the book now, because now I can access material I couldn't get before. And it's text searchable.
Wow.
And anybody who knows the value of that, you can search.
Right, you can just stick a word in.
1800s to last, you know, the last issue, and find out every instance where somebody has done research on a topic.
Right. And, Lori, how many times... And how many investigators do we know that will not share what they've gotten?
I, Absolutely.
Oh, well, you can't build if you know what's not been done. I mean, that was one of the more interesting things to me when I was actually starting the rewrite of PKZO. You know, I was like a kid in a candy store when this whole library opened up.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I started seeing a pattern that about every 20 to 30 years, people repeated the same research that had been done before. Not because simply of the value of repetition, which has a certain amount of value anyway to make sure that somebody else, you know, did it right, yada, yada. No, they did it because they didn't realize the other people had already done it.
Right. Well, you know, and that's something just recently that we've run into. Babs from the Psi Network and I were talking about why we can see things a little more clearly, or sometimes we get more results, or actually being able to see energy through a mirror. And then we got to looking, and you know what? That's been researched, and there's all kinds of stuff on that.
Well, there's a lot of different things, too. I mean, there was clever research done on auras, for example, where they would have someone stand behind this door in the middle of a room, and they had the person stand behind the door right at the very edge, so you couldn't see anything of the person,
uh-huh.
But if their aura actually, you know, if the aura was an actual physical thing, it would extend out. You'd be able to read the aura, right?
Right.
People couldn't read it.
To
read the aura, they have to see the person, which tells you it's not a physical phenomena that you're seeing with your eyes. It's psychic information your unconscious mind is giving you that you then interpret. But I mean, there's all kinds of interesting studies that have been done. You know, I will always, you know, I'll listen to different shows and things, and I'll hear questions come up in the audience. And they've been answered. It's in the research.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's even been controlled double-blind studies that can tell them exactly what they want to know. And yet the guest speakers for that show and the audience, they're clueless. They don't realize their questions do have solid answers because
mm-hmm.
nobody's looked at the research. So to me, that's a big thing. It's saying, you know what? We're not, you know, we want everybody to read this because everybody benefits. We'd love to see more people getting involved in research, but you can't do it right if you don't know what's already been done before.
That's very true.
That's true.
You know, I find so many people now, and excuse me, this will go to your blog on seeing spirits as former people. Hello.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've always said that. You know,
if
I can't tell you how many times that I've been on an investigation, and you know, I don't care. You know, if I make contact with a spirit, or even if I think a spirit is there, I will pray like anything to get that spirit moved across. You know, I will do anything I can do. And
I
can't tell you how many times people have rolled their eyes at me or laughed at me. You know what? Who gives a crap? Number one, if I'm doing something, if I'm helping them get across, then hooray. If I'm not, then what did I hurt? You know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's sort of interesting because when you start to understand the research, it does make you look at a lot of things differently. And if you don't mind, I'll sort of talk a little bit about how PK fits into that in terms of ghost investigation.
Please, that's
because
great.
There's some major issues going on there that nobody ever talks about, at least that I hear normally. I mean, Lloyd Auerbach may mention it on occasion. I know I've talked privately to Chris about this, but I haven't seen him really talk too much about it in public. And you have to bear with me because I'm not nearly as entertaining as Chris is when I'm explaining things. But, but you know, everybody has psychic abilities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're living or dead, everybody's got them, both ESP and PK. And we know this because we can pull any human being off the street randomly and test them. And statistically, they'll have a little bit of a gift.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Okay. Uh-huh.
It may be very tiny, but they'll have a bit of a gift. And they may actually use their gift to prove they don't have a gift, like skeptics,
mm-hmm.
but they still have a little bit of a gift. They're just
right, they'll throw up a block, yeah.
So whatever you do with that gift depends on what is important to your unconscious mind, okay? And
okay.
That's key when I say unconscious mind. It's not the conscious mind, although sometimes you can get it to agree with you. Mine is very good at telling me prices for shopping. It's very good at telling me when something's on sale somewhere, oh, you should just swing by this place because you'll get what you want. But
wow, that's a great gift.
His mind, well, it just depends. You know, what you can do, it depends on what's important to you. Okay, that's part number two. Part number three, all of the current equipment that we use on ghost investigation cases, whether it be Geiger counters or thermal scanners, you know, IR thermometers, tri-field meters, KT meters, doesn't matter what you look at. They're all basically environmental sensors.
Right.
They're used to measure things in the environment. We really don't have a true thing that can measure ghosts. We're using other things that we hope will let us sense ghosts. Okay?
Right.
We're starting to realize that when we get effects with a lot of these different things, you know, I can certainly speak to the tri-field meter for sure on this, and also the infrared thermometer,
mm-hmm.
That sometimes it's not truly that it's picking up a change in the environment. It's that the ghost is messing with your equipment through PK.
Okay.
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 Okay, first, before we go any further, for those people out there that don't know what PK is.
Right. Mind over matter
right.
interaction.
Okay, thank you.
Or psychability of the mind to affect matter. We've all been in a situation where we were really upset and the computer went on the fritz.
Mm-hmm.
That's mind-matter interaction.
Okay.
And, in fact, computers are probably one of the favorite targets that parapsychologists use with people because they're so easy to influence. Okay?
Okay.
And you can screw them up, you know, and even technicians who know nothing about parapsychology know about this effect.
Okay.
You know, you'll call them up, my computer's doing yah, 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 and you're yelling, and they're saying, step away from the computer for half an hour, you know, and you do it, and you come back, and everything's fine. So everybody knows about this. So what I'm saying is everybody can do this, whether you're living or dead. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
And how you use it depends on what's important to you. And ghosts can use it to affect your equipment.
Uh-huh.
Now we get to a really important finding in parapsychology. It's called the experimenter effect. If you look back in the 1960s, there's something called the Rosenthal effect, where they found that the experimenter could have a big impact on whether or not their experiment was successful or not, just by their manner, how they treated people, that kind of thing. This goes beyond that. And this isn't talking about sloppy technique either. Experimenters can use their own psychic abilities to determine whether their experiment will be successful or not.
Wow.
And they've had some fascinating studies. Your people, if you go in that library, you may want to look them up with Marilyn Schlitz and I think it was Stephen Broad. And one of those guys is a complete skeptic, and one is a complete believer. One had a track record of great results. One had a track record of never getting any results. Doing the same kind of studies in the same way. And so they teamed up. And they did a study together where they were using the same participants. They used each person's laboratory so that there would be no difference in terms of who they were working with, the equipment they were working with, the way they did it. The only difference was one of them was responsible for half the runs. One was responsible for the other half.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all done blind. They had no control over the results, the coding, anything. Well, much to everybody's chagrin, the one who always gets results continued to get results, excellent results,
mm-hmm.
and the other one got none.
Wow.
The experimenter can determine, using their own psychic abilities, what they get. Okay. Now, this put the cat among the pigeons in parapsychology because all of a sudden, parapsychologists started saying, am I not getting results because it's my fault, that I'm using my PK to block everybody else, or vice versa? Well, the reason I bring this up with ghost investigations is that when we talk about EVPs, many photo artifacts, and changes in the environmental equipment, we're not talking about physical effects necessarily. We're talking about mind over matter that's done by the ghost to influence our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There's nothing to keep that from being human PK from the ghost investigator.
See, that to me, that blows my mind.
And that is,
it is.
This is why I want to talk about it. That is part of why when you talk to a parapsychologist, oh, I got this and I got that reading, I've got this reading,
mm-hmm.
and we say, what was your experience? Because we're starting to realize that equipment readings are not proof, and they cannot be treated as proof. And I don't care how fun your photos are, they aren't going to be proof either, okay? Because we don't know if you did it. You could be like Ted Cirios, who could put images on film without it ever being opened, without the package ever being opened.
So can I ask you this, Pam?
Yeah.
What steps do you think that we need to make into this?
Well, you know, one of the things I liked is if you listen to Chris's talk the other night, I know they had that great webcast for the Darkness Radio event.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You know, he talked about how we can all tune in and sense these things.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is, you know, you see people swing one way and the other. Let's get rid of all the psychics. You know, let's get rid of all the... You want to try and have everything. You want
mm-hmm.
to have as many different ways of trying to figure something out as possible. But what I would say is you cannot eliminate the human component. You know, you've got to pay attention to your subjective experiences. Because the only way you really know that you're not just, you know, having fun with your own equipment, because if your unconscious mind enjoys playing with new toys, it
mm-hmm.
will play with those toys.
Uh-huh.
Okay? You've got to have something to tell you there's something more going on than your PK. You've got to have some sense that there's a spirit there, something going on. Because here's the third piece. You can have a ghost there, and it could be your PK influencing the equipment to tell you there's a ghost there.
Okay.
Interesting.
It could be your PK just having fun with the equipment, and there's no ghost there. It could be the ghost there, and it's influencing the equipment, which is what we all hope is actually what's going on, at least some of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk to a parapsychologist, you see, and they're listening to your story, all of this is going through their mind. Is this real? Is this the ghost? Is this you? What's
well,
really
then how do we ever know?
You don't. That is the key I've got to tell people. It is not proof.
Right.
You cannot go around saying, I have proof. You don't. Sorry.
But
you do have suggestive and interesting findings. And the more of those that you can put together, the more interesting it becomes. Okay, I'll give you another example, EVPs. I have a good friend, Al Rauber and Garrett Huspeth, who do a lot of EVP work with ghost investigations. And they've had some interesting things where they'll have a psychic seeing something. They'll have somebody in the house experiencing something at the same time as they're getting an EVP that fits with what everybody else is saying. Now, that's great. You've got three different streams of information telling you the same thing.
Right.
And you start to say, oh, okay, we can probably put some faith in this.
Mm-hmm.
However, they have also gotten EVPs that sound, I know Garrett has, that sounds like his own voice. And he's suspicious that it is his PK simply doing it, not a ghost.
So let's say Lori calls, some people call them loud thinkers. So that...
Whatever term you like. But the problem is, you know, if people talk to us, we probably sound, you know, kind of like we don't want to commit to anything. There's a reason for that. There's a reason for that. And if you read the research, you'll understand those things. And it helps you approach the investigation better, and it also helps you when you're dealing with people who are skeptical or who aren't in this field, and will make you sound more credible to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll listen to you more. But every time you talk to parapsychologists, the first words out of my mouth is, frankly, I don't want to see the photos.
Uh-huh.
Tell me your experiences. That's what's mm-hmm. really meaningful, because ultimately that's what it's about.
You know, that makes a lot of sense because, you know, Susie knows this, but, you know, with the computers, I'm the same way. I mean, I can get, you know, I can have it lock up, do all kinds of things,
yeah.
And I think, Susie, but you've had this happen.
Tonight, Lori.
Yeah, we did.
We did. We were both flying around trying to get things done, and we came home, and my computer would not work. Lori came home, and hers wouldn't work, and then Blog Talk messed up.
That's okay. I think Glenn Buchanan shut down the entire military intelligence network for about a fourth of Europe So, I mean, it's just well known. And it makes sense because it is actually the favorite target used by parapsychologists to study. But you can do mind over matter things with all kinds of stuff. It can be spoon bending. It can be turning energy wheels. It can be making your car battery die. It can be blowing light bulbs. That's what I do when I get upset.
We have problems with light bulbs in this house.
Yeah, I don't touch a light bulb if I'm angry. Or it's the switch. It's the switch to the wall. That's what gets me in trouble.
Now, I've had a lot happen, but I think the only time that, and I don't get scared of anything, but the only time that I got bothered, because, and I've talked to Lloyd about this a lot, because I know that I have, and I guess you would call it poltergeist activity, you know.
Yeah.
I've always had it happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time that it got to me and my heart sort of raced was when I heard my microwave come on, and I was here during the middle of the day, and I was talking to a friend on the phone, and I thought, oh, someone must be heating up something, and I realized that my husband was at work and my kids were at school. And I thought, no.
Because there's static electricity, though. That would be the one thing I would watch out for with electronics coming on. Because, like, if you hear stereos coming on in the middle of the night, I used to have that in Texas. Very often static electricity. Now, where it gets interesting is I had a friend once who would unplug a sewing machine, and it would continue, you know, and it would start up and run on its own, unplugged.
Now that's a little freaky dicky.
Okay, you know, that's clearly not static electricity.
Right.
So
I don't know if that's PK, but it's sure spooky.
That is spooky.
Something causing that machine to run.
Yeah.
If that can happen, certainly.
And that would cause me to run.
Well, yeah.
I can save my electrical bill.
But, you know, if that can happen here, you can go out on an investigation, and certainly that can happen somewhere else.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Wait, you know what? We have another caller. Do you guys want to take a question?
Sure, always.
Okay.
Okay. Caller 214, are you there?
I am.
Who do we have?
Hi. Well, I'm hoping that y'all give psychic readings, do you?
No, we don't.
Okay. I saw something in the keywords about psychics, so that's what I thought was going on.
Well, do you have a question for Pamela Heath? Maybe she can answer a question about the psychics for you.
Sure, perhaps. I would like to know when a particular person is going to be on medications and coming back to El Paso.
That's not a question I can answer.
Okay.
Pam is a parapsychologist.
Mm-hmm.
What's your name, sweetie?
My name is Emma.
Emma.
Mind over matter and survival.
Yeah. You know what, Emma? You kind of hang around a little bit because we're going to get some more psychics on the show, and we'll be sure to take your call when we have one on. Okay.
Okie dokie. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, Emma. You have a
wonderful
evening.
You too, honey. Bye bye.
Bye bye now.
In general, I would say that psychics tend to be bad with dates, and I think that's because when you access that information, you're in a place where there is no time, literally. There's no sense of time.
Right.
And what you have to do as a psychic is kind of guess based on cues.
Mm-hmm.
You might look and see, oh, there's a Christmas tree there. Okay, so it's around Christmas time, but which year? Well, you don't really know. So I'm just letting you know that, or your listener know that times can be very iffy for psychics to accurately pick up. Some people can do it, but it's pretty rare. I know if I get a specific date or time from a ghost, I'm always surprised. It does sometimes happen, but it's kind of rare.
I have to laugh at your comment because I was supposed to at work. I had promised somebody that I would get them something before Christmas, and I completely forgot about it. And she said, well, you said you'd have it to me before Christmas. And I said, yes, but did I say what Christmas?
Uh-huh. Rather, that's why my head picked that analogy. I was sort of surprised I grabbed a Christmas tree. Okay. No, I don't. I don't like to do. I did for a while do some phone reads and stuff, but I really don't. To me, it's too much work, to be honest. And I would rather put sort of my time and energy into trying to help people who already have these experiences learn how to cope with them better. You know, especially the poltergeist phenomenon, like you talk about, because this freaks a lot of people out. And the one thing they need to hear most, and that I try to express in the PK Zone, is that this is normal. You know, you can look at any culture around the world since basically the dawn of time, and people have been doing this stuff. It's normal, and in all kinds of ways. And I suspect, in fact, that we do it more often than we realize. Like I say, with the computers and with other things, it's very common. The thing I would like to see studied more that I haven't is the connection between batteries draining and ghosts.
Right.
I mean, I would like to see more, or and it may not be ghosts even, but battery draining and mind over matter happening. Because, for example, Dugan Gersey was trying to film The Flying Men of Haiti, and he was watching these people go 20 feet up into the air, you know, and turn upside down and hang in the air and all this stuff outdoors. And he was like, he's a professional cameraman, I guess, with National Geographic or something. And so he was dying to get this, you know, on film. He brought like 20 packs of new batteries. The second all this stuff would start, his batteries would drain. The second it was done, they were back to full. And I think we've
That's amazing to me, the fact that they go back to full.
They go back to full. And we've all had experiences, I have, on investigations where either my flashlight battery died or other, you know, a camera.
Your camera's gone.
And
yeah.
It was dead. And yet you leave the haunted house and all of a sudden it reads full again.
Right.
Or the experience I had, one of them on the Hornet, was I was walking through the hangar bay and my flashlight suddenly died. And I was thinking, oh, crap, you know, I'm supposed to be doing a flashlight tour. I'm one of the guys. And I'm thinking, I thought I had good batteries in here, you know, and I'm sort of ragging on myself. And I look up, and there's a ghost getting into one of the helicopters in a flight suit. And then he disappears, and my flashlight comes back on full.
Holy crap. So you saw that with your naked eye.
I saw it with my naked eyes. That was not seen psychically. So, yeah, things are always happening on the Hornet. But the thing that's interesting to me is this. We always talk about them as if they are using this energy. Maybe not. Maybe they're just creating a dampening field. I don't know what's going on.
Right.
Because if they were using the energy, why would it be full again as soon as the mind over matter stuff stops?
You know, that's a good point. Because, you know, when I go to Bardstown, if there is and I'm going to tell you what, if you ever go to Bardstown, Kentucky, the Talbert Tavern, oh, my Lord, it's so haunted.
Yes.
Anyway, there is a spirit. Every now and again, and it has to be the same one because I get the same feeling, that, I mean, it's like I have a power surge, and I'm instantly irritated, agitated, I want to pace, I want to get mad, and I think that, you know what, if that spirit has that kind of energy to pump me up like that, why would it drain your batteries?
I don't think it's energy. I think that's how he feels. And I don't think it has anything to do with energy. If you read the suicide book, in the section about how they can affect the living, there are several instances where they really are not trying to hurt people or upset people or make them sad or make them angry or anything. They're oblivious to the fact that they are causing an effect on you. And
really?
And it's not deliberate. And they'll just be feeling really, really, really sad. And if you're sensitive, you pick up on that mood. And if you're not aware that it doesn't belong to you, all of a sudden you start feeling really, really sad. And as somebody who does use their abilities, shall we say, with ghosts enough, I've had this happen several times where, you know, I'm doing something, usually just walking down the street. I'm not doing an investigation or anything. And all of a sudden I start feeling really sad or... another case, I started whistling The Shores of Tripoli, and I'm like, wait a minute.
That's wild.
I never said that, number one. And number two, why would I whistle The Shores of Tripoli? You know, and I tune in, there's a marine spirit, you know, marching beside me, you know. And the other case, it was another spirit that just happened to be really, really sad. And if I hadn't been aware of the fact that they can inadvertently, you know, their emotions spill over.
Well, I think if you're any a little bit empathic, I mean, I know that a lot of times Lori will pick up my bad mood or I'll pick up Lori's bad mood, you know. That's just, you know, how you...
I do that, too, all the time. And, in fact, yeah, that's actually a little bit of what Chris was talking about with ambiance.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to practice your psychic abilities and you haven't had it before and you're around people, you can just close your eyes and a lot of times you can feel their mood. And that's the same kind of feeling that you'll pick up from a lot of spirits.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel if somebody's angry. You don't have to be looking at them to feel them steaming mad.
Right.
You know,
right.
Or if they're just beaming with joy, you can feel that, too. And it's sort of interesting. It's like a lot of people, even my mother would never probably admit to being psychic, but she can go into a room and tell if there's been a fight there recently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if it's
a total
stranger's house.
Yeah, you can feel the funky energy. Yeah.
Yeah, we all have this ability, and it's referred to as ambiance.
Right.
And something Lynn Buchanan and a lot of remote viewers teach. And it's a very useful skill to pick up, but it also works with ghosts. And
okay.
Sort of aware of that.
Before we run out of time, we have about 23 minutes.
Okay.
I really want you to talk about your suicide book. Tell us and tell people how they can get your books. If they want to learn some more about these things that you're talking about.
Susie, but can I ask a question from the chat room first?
Of course.
I'm sorry. Nellie from the chat room.
Yeah.
She's one of your friends on MySpace and one of our very good friends. Hi. She wanted to know if you knew if PK was part of the Bellwitch haunting from the American Haunting.
You know, I really am not familiar with that case.
Okay.
So I can't say anything about it.
okay.
A lot of those famous hauntings, though, like the Amityville Horror, I know some of the people who investigated that, who did the first investigation, and it was a total fraud, and they knew it from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And what was involved is there was police memory there, but there was nothing active, and it was very funny because Alex Tanis was a psychic who went with the parapsychologist for that, and he just watched all this happen and sort of in a very unemotional way. You know, it's like, okay, it's like watching a movie here, but there's nothing active, and they walk over and they look in the kitchen table, and there's this big juicy contract for selling the story with movie rights, and they knew from the first investigation exactly what was going on with that, and it's a hoax. So I have to say for some of those, the Bell Witch, I'm not familiar with. I can't say if it's a similar story or not.
Okay.
That Bell Witch, I'm going to tell you what, watch the whole damn movie, 2 hours worth, and it didn't bother me until the last scene, and then it freaked me out for a week.
Well, you know, I know Terry Painter, who was one of the parapsychologists who investigated the movie The Entity.
Uh-huh.
And the thing you learn about these is, you know, they'll say based on a true story, you know, or something like this. And and usually the basis on the true story has nothing to do with the facts. You
well,
know, it was a true story that happened, and we're going to make everything up around it. Because Cary, if you ask him about it, he'll just roll his eyes. You know, it has no correlation with what, you know, they actually found or what happened or anything. So just take what you see in the media with a grain of salt. But there certainly are tons and tons of haunted places, very active haunted places, Gettysburg, you know, especially up and down the East Coast. But, you know, everywhere you go, I think, has haunted places, it seems
like. Of course, you know, everywhere you go, there are people, and everywhere you go, there are spirits.
Yeah.
Plus, I think a lot of times people pack some around with them. So
I know some people who certainly do.
I had a little message that came to me through an IM.
Uh-huh.
Darkness Dave stopped by to say hi to me, and I told him that I was talking to you right now. He told me to tell you hello.
Okay. Yeah, I just emailed him about half an hour ago. So.
Okay. And I believe that was all. I also did want to ask you if you could just talk briefly, if you didn't mind, about your energy wells.
The energy wells.
Oh,
okay. They actually aren't mine. They were created by a physicist called Harry Stein.
Okay.
And they're very easy to do. Lloyd's book also, you know, has information on how to do this. But basically what you can do is just take an ordinary 4-inch square piece of paper and you fold it, you know, from corner to corner twice. And if you want to see sort of how to do this, you can go onto my website to the PDF download section, and there's a little, you know, do's and don'ts or flyer of how to do PK, and it talks about how to do spoon bending and how to do these energy wheels. But basically, you're going to fold it so it tints itself up slightly, and you stick it on anything that's pointed. You can use a little nail and a piece of clay or whatever.
Oh, okay.
You don't have to get expensive or anything. Mm-hmm. The only thing I would say is if you don't want to have to go crazy holding your breath or not breathing on it, it's handy to get one of those glass bell jars from, like, Michael's and
yeah.
fill it with Vaseline or oil in the bottom so the air draft can't get in easily. And then
so you're gonna push your energy through the bell jar?
Mm-hmm. You don't push it through it.
Well, yeah, you just...
You don't necessarily even use energy. What you do
is you
connect, you and the wheel become one. And that's what tends to work well for a lot of people. Although, if you're very angry, that works great too.
Because you know, I mean, I can't actually move anything, but you know, with my energy, I can make my energy larger and actually set off motion detectors.
Yeah,
so
people can do this really well. By the way, they can really move energy wheels like crazy, and I think because they're not conditioned to think they can't do it, but. But I will put a hand on either side of the glass, and sometimes I'll sort of send energy through it. But I think what works better for me is to sort of visualize that I am the wheel, and I'm spinning, and I'm just like a little kid. I'm spinning, and I'm having a great time, and I'll see it start to go usually the opposite direction of what I was ever trying to do. So I guess my
is that interesting
making a comment.
I am so gonna try that.
Spoon bending may be easier in some ways for people to start with if you really remember a very emotional event. I think one of the guys who was able to do the best at this was in Vietnam and watched his whole platoon got hung up in the trees or parachuting in, and they got hung up and they were all
gunned
to death basically except for him, and he had to watch this. He was stuck too, and he saw that incident and the spoon or the fork just fell over.
Wow.
Fell over in his hand. So you can think of a peak emotional event. That tends to let you access the ability to influence matter more easily. Now, I like to mention this, too, to get it back to the ghost question, because the same things that make it easier for us to do mind over matter are the things that make it easier for ghosts to do mind over matter.
I would think,
okay?
Because it's not a physical thing.
If they're really emotional, you're going to have an easier time doing things.
Okay.
Just be aware.
Okay.
And now, they can also learn to do it. I mean, because one of the changes you see over time is people become more skilled at PK, say you're doing anomalous healing all the time. I like to do that. Is you don't feel emotional with it necessarily. I mean, you may feel love or peace or, you know, whatever, but you don't have to feel any emotion at all. You can be in this sort of place of complete neutrality, and you're just doing it. But that involves you start to learn the right state of consciousness to tune into to actually succeed.
Wow.
So there's two ways that you can do mind over matter. One is to be really emotional, and it doesn't have to be a negative emotion. You can be having a lot of fun. There's a story in the book of this woman who was in love. And she was with the guy she was crazy about, and this chip bowl started spinning and dancing in front of them, you know, just reacting to her mood. So it doesn't have to be a negative emotion. It can be a positive emotion. But if you can use that really strong positive, you know, positive or negative emotion, you can do mind over matter. Just about anybody can do mind over matter. But if you talk about people who do it on a regular basis, you can't. It's just too exhausting to kind of pull up that kind of emotion. You do better if you just sort of go into this altered place. I don't know if Lloyd's ever talked about his mind over matter. He's moved objects like ashtrays and things,
mm-hmm.
and bowling balls. And what he does is he goes into a very detached state. So he uses more of that that mode. So you have these two sort of streams. But did you want me to talk about the suicide book?
Yes.
Well, yes, because you know what? The minute I was telling people today at work, they were like, oh, my God, I want to know about that. So, you know, it's probably a hot thing. And if you can tell us how we can get it, that would be great,
well,
too.
You can buy the book anywhere, basically. It's something that some of the border stores are carrying in them. They're certainly available on Amazon and elsewhere. I like to tell people, don't be intimidated by the book. It's really not depressing. I mean, you would think it is from the topic, but it's really not. And it does explain a lot of things besides suicide that are very useful. It talks about the different stages people go through in the afterlife. It talks about if you ever study channeled material, and that would certainly include EVP stuff to a certain extent, you need to be aware of the pitfalls that you can get into with some of this kind of material.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about that. So it has a lot of things in it. It has a chapter on messages to those left behind, which I think can bring a lot of comfort.
Mm-hmm.
It also has a whole chapter devoted to suicidal people, so that if you know somebody who's thinking about suicide, let them be informed of what they're getting into. Let them read firsthand from the people who have done it and succeeded, you know, what they think about this.
Now, how did you get the information for this book? How did you do your research on this?
We did a number of different things. First, I read about 500 books on channeled books, and I pulled everything that involved suicide out of it.
Mm.
And we also got near-death experiences. We also got past life reincarnation stories from past life regressions.
Mm-hmm.
We got dream data. We got every different kind of information we could to try and see if they all dovetailed and said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we were treating it almost like a policeman would treat eyewitnesses.
Right.
And see where does everybody say the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and where do they say things that are different. And we sort of present it all. And then for the last third of the book, we looked at three types of suicide. We looked at traditional suicide. We looked at assisted suicide, which I have to say is totally different from other forms in terms of the outcome in the afterlife. And we also looked at suicide bombers. And for the suicide bomber stuff, there was nothing in the literature to speak of. There's very little, I should say. There's a little bit about suicide murder.
Mm-hmm.
And so we actually went to a bunch of psychics, and we said we'd like to do question and answer sessions with suicide bomber spirits. And they all said, no!
Yeah, who wants to dip into that funky crap, you know? You.
So how would you
That's like waiting around in toxic waste, you know? You don't want that.
No, actually, it's not as bad as you think, but what we did is we have them actually channel the spirit guides for those souls.
Oh.
There are spirit guides who specialize in dealing with these spirits. That's their main job,
really?
Is to deal with terrorist souls. And so we would start by channeling the spirit guides, some of whom were very evolved, very interesting, got fascinating messages.
Well, wouldn't you think that those people would be, like, under some form of mental illness? You know what I'm saying?
No,
they have had to have been brainwashed.
No. What it is, in some cases, I mean, it's going to be like other. I think what surprised me is how much they're like traditional suicides. They
really
feel they have no choice.
Exactly.
They feel they've run out of options.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not mental illness necessarily. I mean, you can have some people who commit suicide because they have bipolar disorder or other things. But most people who commit suicide, it's because they feel othered. They feel they have no choices. They have no options. They've run out of possibilities.
And
it's the same with a lot of suicide bombers, from what I could tell.
Well, and if you think about it, I mean, they're from a different upbringing. And
a different culture.
And,
exactly right.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's interesting stuff, and I think part of what I really liked about it is because we were dealing with such a high level of spirit guide there for some of those sessions, is that it's like reading Zen material. It's like the more you read it, the more you get out of it. There's some incredibly powerful messages in there. So, I mean, I would add, say, I still reread that part of the book because it's like I'm still getting more out of it.
Well, I can't wait to get a hold of it. I got to tell you that.
I
know. That's... And you say that Borders has it. Is there a website or maybe Amazon?
Borders has it, Amazon has it. It's called Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. And it's put out by North Atlantic Books. I have, if you go to my website at PamelaHeath.com, or you go to my co-author's website, JohnKlimo.com, and that's JohnKlimo.com. We both have links and information about it. We have the original introduction to the book, which got cut out because the publisher was freaking out because the book was so long. They wanted us to cut 100 pages, and I said, sure, just tell us what's redundant. And they ended up adding about 9 or 10 after that. So,
wow.
But what we are hoping, we're working, John and I have just started a new book on the afterlife, and what we're hoping to do, if the publisher will let us, is include the original transcripts from those question and answer sessions.
That would be great.
Incredible reading, but they're like 100 pages of material. And when we tried to get it in the original suicide book, we were afraid the publishers might just explode. So we had to back off on that, but we're thinking maybe we can do it now. So I'd really like it if people could read those original.
That would be wonderful.
That would be wonderful.
It would.
Yeah.
I would love to read that.
So that's that book. And if you're curious who John Klimo was, since I just casually dropped him in there, he's the world's foremost expert on channeling. And he wrote the book on channeling, which is called Channeling, on Receiving Information from Paranormal Sources, I believe it's titled. But if you just write in channeling in Amazon, it comes
on
up.
Amazon, okay.
Yeah, he is the authority on channeling in the world.
Wow.
So I co-wrote it with him, got his input.
Wonderful, okay.
Besides, I stole from his library. He had some. You know.
Okay.
Pam, I have one more question for you.
Sure.
How in the world have you had time to be an anesthesiologist, a parapsychologist, a ballroom dancer, an artist, a cartoonist, and an author?
I don't do them simultaneously. Well, at least not all of them.
You just like one day when you're like 7, lay out the course of your life and say, okay, from this year to this year, I'll do this.
Exactly.
No. I just I enjoy exploring different sides of life.
Right.
I have fun with different things. I think the cartooning, the painting, that's sort of been a theme throughout my life. And if you look at specific things like fencing, I was on the fencing team of my college. Or karate, or ballroom dancing, or archery, or kayaking, that kind of thing. Maybe I did more for a couple years and then sort of moved on to other things. But the art certainly has been a theme throughout my life. I drew in second grade, so, I mean, I started pretty young with this.
That's great.
Multi-talented.
I'll tell you what, she's the most interesting woman in the world, I swear.
Oh, not
you.
Not true.
And we love her boots.
We love those boots, girlfriend.
We do.
We're not going to know what you're talking about. Those red boots are fabulous. And they're
I said, oh, my nerves, look at her shoes. Those are some big old touch me boots.
Oh, they're great boots.
I thought about her today. I had to go buy some. Not red. They weren't red, but they were black.
Nordstrom's had them.
Oh, okay.
I go by Nordstrom's. And,
well, they're good looking.
And they're waterproof. They're called like Aquaphors or something. You can
snow
and slush in them. And yeah, no, they're cool.
Well, they look terrific. They look like they're crusty.
Right. They're great.
I know. I saw those boots and it was like a lemming to the sea.
Well, look, everybody. PamelaHeath.com. She's got two books out. She's got the PK Zone and Suicide. Tell me what the rest of it is.
What really happens in the afterlife.
What really happens in the afterlife. Y'all grab them and go to our MySpace page and get on her MySpace page and go take a look at those blogs. You're going to love them. And Lori Jones, we have about 5 minutes.
Okay.
So I'm going to put our song up. Oh, hello. I'm going to put our song up quieter.
I know.
It didn't get quieter. All right, we're not going to have our song for a while.
Okay, that's fine. Pam, thank you so, so very much.
Anytime. I mean, you seriously, I'd be happy to be back anytime.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, you know what? Once we read this book, you're probably going to have to come on.
Yes.
Please do. You know, there's some amazing stuff that came through, and John and I are both very proud of that book, and yet people are really afraid to open it. And I can't tell you how many people have had, they've come to me with a question and said, you know, I had someone who committed suicide in my family. I'd like to know what it said. And I'm like, well, you know, you can read the book. It's like,
right.
You know, and then like weeks go by and it's like, well, I don't really want to, you know, they're just afraid to open it.
Now, I can't wait to open it up and eat it. It's going to be great.
I know. I can't wait.
Well, again,
because you'll tell which parts are John's and which are mine. We have different styles.
And Susie, babe, we're going to have to meet her someday where she's speaking. Or
that's what I told Joan today. I said, you know what? She's one of those people that you'd hold hostage and say, okay, tell me all of your favorite things. I'm going to give them to me. Now tell me this stuff.
So are you going to any events this year or what?
Yes.
What are you going to?
I don't know. We're going to look at your calendar.
There's so many. Our
okay,
dance cards are so full.
I think we're going to the G4 Summit.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not going to be there.
Yeah, we're going to go there. But
where are you going, Miss Pamela?
Yes.
Well, I'm being secretive about the only place I've agreed to go because I'm not going as a guest. I'm going just to attend, and I'm actually meeting some friends, including Pam Coronado, who's I've known for many years. She's a psychic.
Okay.
Cool.
And she and I connected many, many, many years ago through Alan Vaughn, who is also both a teacher and a psychic and a parapsychologist. He was one of the few like me who had a foot in both worlds.
Okay.
And some other friends, you know.
Well, you'll have to send us a secret little email
it,
and let us know.
I'm going incognito or semi-incognito, but
okay.
But Davis, I think that might have been a little bit of ragging on me about this.
Okay. She sounds like us. That's us,
I know
too.
It.
You see on our calendar, undisclosed.
Yeah. Well, you know, because we change our minds. We change our minds.
Until recently, I've been working 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
It's really hard for me to ever get free to do any
mm-hmm.
event
mm-hmm.
unless I could arrange another doc to come cover for me. However, I got to tell you, this year I am refusing to do that anymore. I'm only working on weekdays, and I am thinking of quitting medicine come the end of March so
really?
I can devote myself to getting more writing done. So,
good Lord. Well, bless your heart. But I'll tell you something. The world needs fabulous anesthesiologists. We had to have one last couple weeks ago, so.
Yeah, but, you know, I just feel like I can do more for people. You know, it's sort of interesting. I know I went into anesthesia because I like relieving suffering.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't the money or the prestige. It was about relieving pain, relieving suffering. And I guess I feel I can touch more people with these books.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the purpose of every book I've written or every book I have, in the works that's coming down the pike, it's always been to try and make people more comfortable.
Right.
The PK Zone was actually written for people, and I knew a number of them at the time, who were having poltergeist experiences and didn't know how to cope with it. And it was like, okay, look, you're normal. This is okay, and this.
So
is
you
want
you want to be a spiritual anesthesiologist?
Well, I bring comfort and understanding, and the suicide book, that's why, you know, it bothers me when people are so afraid to touch it, because it's all about trying to make people realize it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
These spirits are going to be okay. They're forgiven. They move on. There's help for them. There are things you can do to help them. You
yeah.
have to forgive yourself,
yeah.
and you have to forgive them.
That's
and
right.
you're still loved and all this stuff, and I mean, it's got very comforting messages in it, and the people who have actually bought the book. I mean, John and I both get a lot of emails from people saying, thank you for writing this book. This really helped me. And that's why I wrote it. And the books I have coming down the pike, it's the same thing. So I guess I just feel I can help more people this way and reach more people.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to it.
One person at a time, one case at a time. You know, I'm not
right.
reaching a lot of people.
Well, we got about 30 seconds left, Lori Jones.
Okay.
And so we want to thank Pam.
Yes.
And want to thank everybody for listening.
And everyone who was in the chat room tonight.
Who's in the chat room? We got 20 seconds.
We've almost lost everyone, but we had about probably 30, 40 people.
Oh, we were still on air.
Yes. What the hell?
We're still on air.
All right. Well, look, 7 seconds. I just want to say thanks again, and we love y'all, and I'm pooping out.
Okay.
All right, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
I'm blushing right now. Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.